Hi, ladies and gentlemen, this is Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik, and this is an independent and alternative radio show dedicated to truth, real diversity, and European identity in a world gone completely Europhobic, or anti-white, if you prefer that term. The website is redice.tv. We do radio shows, live TV shows, news, and much more. On this radio program, we feature interviews with people that to various degrees have broken through the conditioning and political correctness, and who've mustered up the courage to finally speak out about it, tell it like it is, and finally start taking their own side and speaking out against those organized interests that are hostile to us. Today we're speaking with brother and sister Alfred and Monica Schaefer about their recent experiences in Germany and Canada, respectively. Alfred was recently raided by German police and had his computers and other things confiscated. And Monica, a former Green Party member and violinist, has been ostracized from her duties and outed as someone who dares to question the greatest taboo of our age, the Holocaust. Alfred, we've spoken with before on the program, and Monica, who's a new guest, has recently discovered that we've been lied to about everything from 9/11 and the Holocaust and much in between. We're going to speak more about this today, so stay tuned. Welcome to the program, Alfred and Monica. It's great to have you both here. I tried to get you on a month ago, a little bit more than that. And obviously, you guys have been very involved with everything that's been happening, both of you at the same time in different parts of the world, it seems. And I definitely want to spend some more time talking about that here today. But Alfred, before we talk about what happened to you with your raid by the police in Germany, confiscation of your computer, all these crazy things happened, I wanted to ask you, Monica, if you could just first tell us a bit about yourself. You know, you made that video, Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust, you know, and how that came together. It's almost at 100,000 views right now, which is good. So was it Alfred that dragged you into all of this, or how did the video come together?
Yeah, okay. Hello, and thanks for having me on the program. And also, first of all, I'd like to just say that Alfred and I are brother and sister. I live in Jasper, Alberta, Canada, and Alfred lives in Germany. And I would say I wasn't dragged into it. I've been a very willing participant in all of this. I started to wake up to some of the deceptions that are foisted on us about 5 years ago, and that began with learning about the 9/11 event, September 11th, 2001, and of course that was 10 years post 9/11, but that's when I started to really learn about that. And then a few years later, like, you know, maybe 2 years later, I guess, just started to be confronted with history of World War II issues, and I resisted at first. I just thought, no, don't mix this up with 9/11 truth. It'll undermine the 9/11 truth movement. This is just a subject, you know, the Holocaust is such a subject that it's just so solidly ingrained in my brain at that time and everybody else's brains, it seems, that it's as solid as there's a nose on my face. So I did resist at first, but when I did finally look, oh my goodness, that was quite surprising to me. And I realized that, not all is as it seems. And yeah, so I just began to research and read and look at videos and documentaries as much as I could, because I needed to be absolutely sure for myself that I wasn't just going down some road, you know, that you know, a few kooky people have led me down. No, it was, yeah. So that's how it came about. And then in a conversation with my brother, I told him the story that I had berated our parents. I had actually made a reproach to my mom years ago. I think I was a teenager at the time, but I was just so besotten with the whole story of the Holocaust. I just was so upset by all those horrible things that we learned about, that I had said to her that, you know, how could you have let this happen? I'm sure that you and your friends and other people, you could have gotten together to stop all this from happening. And, you know, she just basically was very quiet, but said to me, you know, we just didn't know. We just did not know. And more recently, when I thought back on that, I just felt really bad about it. And of course, our parents have both died, and I couldn't speak to them about it anymore. And I just mentioned that in passing to Alfred. I said, geez, I wish I could apologize to them for those things that I said all those years ago. And Alfred, he recognized that as a very important story. He just recognized it and grabbed onto it. And so when I went to visit in June of this year, 2016, and he has a, you know, recording apparatus, we made a little video, and that's how that started.
Well, it's a good one. I mean, as I said, it went all over the place. And it's always good, you know, when you have different voices like that kind of come in and hit such a sensitive topic, such a topic that has so much layers really around it of emotions and programming and everything else. So it's really successful. But one of the things we should spend a little bit of time on, Monica, is the consequent reactions. I mean, you play the violin beautifully in the beginning. That's what you do, right? But you've had tremendous backlash in terms of your profession. Tell us what has happened here.
Yes. Well, there is this paper called The Practice of Ritual Defamation that was sent to me by Frederick Tobin during the summer. And I recognized myself in every one of the elements of the ritual defamation that are outlined in that paper. So I was what you call a prominent community member. And I should explain that I live in a small town. The population is about 5,000 people. And we are our own community in terms of most people that live here. We live here, we work here, we play here. It's not like a bedroom community of a bigger city nearby. No, this is a community very much sort of encapsulated in itself. We're in a national park, Jasper National Park, beautiful place to live. And I've lived here for 35 years, and I have become, air quotes here, famous in the community just because of my involvement in so many aspects of the community. So that made me a perfect candidate for ritual defamation. And one of the elements of ritual defamation is that it works best on a person who had great visibility. And of course, living in a small town, that makes me the perfect candidate for that process. So yeah, it started right away when I came home. I mean, a volunteer gig that I had for Canada Day was canceled 3 days beforehand. And speaking of volunteer gigs, I have been volunteering with my violin over the decades, countless times. I cannot even begin to count the number of occasions and times and that I have volunteered with my music. I mean, any fundraisers that people have asked me to play at, I've always obliged, and I play regularly in places like the seniors home, or I have played in the schools and at community dinners, and all over town I have given my music. And of course, that's because I have a passion for that, and it just is, you know, it's a joy to give the music, and I enjoy when people appreciate it. But I also make my living with my music. So I have students, and I play for occasions, you know, such as, you know, wine and cheese parties and weddings, this kind of thing. So people come here from far away. It's a very touristic place. And so, yeah, the violin is everything for me. I do it for a passion, and I do it also professionally. So, going back to what has happened to me. So there were newspaper articles in the local papers, both papers, that really kind of the main paper, it was a very big hit piece on me, and they did not allow me a rebuttal. And I submitted a letter to the editor back, which was shorter than their article, and there was nothing in it that had personal slander or anything like that. I was basically just defending myself and putting some very hard, solid evidence bits in to explain my position, and they refused to publish that. So I thought that was quite unfair.
What did they say about you, Monica? What were some of the things they accused you of, or however we want to word that?
Yeah, well, basically, you know, hate. Like, I'm suddenly full of hate, and I have, well, they outlined a few things that I learned from that article that I didn't learn through other channels, that I was banned from entering the local Legion here. And that's not just some quiet little place that only veterans go into. It's a hub of activity in this town. Much music happens there, and other social, you know, occasions happen there, and events happen there. And I've been there many, many, many times in the past. It's a real kind of a hub. So I've been banned from entering the Legion. Now, how ironic is that? The veterans, didn't they fight for freedoms? And don't the freedoms include freedom of speech? Like, it just is quite an irony. So that's not the only place I've been kind of shut out of. There's an activity called busking, which most people will probably know what that is. It's when you put your case open, your music case open in front of you, and you play in a public place, like on a sidewalk downtown, and passersby, if they choose, they can, you know, throw a little bit of money into your case. So this was sanctioned just this summer. Like, I personally lobbied for this activity to be allowed here. It wasn't allowed here before. Like, how bizarre is that? But anyway, I had lobbied for it in town council a few years ago when I presented to them to tell them why it's such a great idea to allow busking and how they could do it and you know, issue permits and whatnot for it, like they do in many other towns and cities around the world. Anyway, they were very enthusiastic. It took them a while to do it. They finally got it done for this summer, and lo and behold, when I went to get my busking license, what a surprise that they gave me, you know, they didn't issue it to me, and they gave me a cursory message about, because of my quote unquote publicly proclaimed non-inclusive beliefs, I was not.
What?
Yes. I know, which doesn't make sense at all, because you could turn it on its head, who is being non-inclusive here.
Right,
and
right.
Also, I can tell you, and friends have said this too in letters to the issuing, you know, authorities, that never have I used my violin stage as a soapbox, you know, we could call it, to talk to people about the latest issues that I'm concerned about. And I've always been an activist on all kinds of issues, like all my life. Since I was a teenager, I was an environmental activist, a peace activist. So I've always kind of been doing those kind of activities too. But it's a separate thing from when I'm playing my violin. I have never used my music stage as my soapbox. And I probably should have, but I haven't. Yeah. So.
Well, one of the articles I saw, I don't know if CBC is one of the bigger outlets in Canada, but this particular story was from there. The headline went, "Hate speech complaint filed against Jasper woman for Holocaust denial video. Green Party condemns former candidate's, quote, terribly misguided, unquote, statements," right? So they're talking about you here and your former involvement with the Green Party, and they were dragged into all of this as well. I find this just remarkable that they're going after you and dragging all these other kind of, as you say, kind of organizations into this or whatever. But for those of us that haven't seen, or for those of our audience that haven't seen the video that you made, can you just tell us what some of the points are that you wanted to convey in there so they can get a better understanding of why they have gone after you in this way?
Yes, I'd like to do that. And also, further to that, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Green Party. I hadn't done that yet, and thanks for bringing that into the conversation. But first, I'll describe the video. It's 6 minutes long, under 6 minutes, the English version. I also did an original German version. It's not just overdubbed. We recorded a German version because I am bilingual. And so I was able to do that. And the German version is 6.5 minutes long. I guess I spoke a little bit slower. Anyway, when I was in grade one, the first week of school, I wore a nice Dirndlkleid, that's the traditional German dress, with a blouse and an apron. And they're very, very beautiful dresses. Anyway, the kids, day one was just normal because the kids didn't know what that represented. But obviously they must have told their parents about it. And this was in 1965. I was 6 years old. So the next day, the kids were taunting me, and they obviously, the parents must have talked about Germany and how bad Germans were, because the kids were taunting me with Heil Hitler and running away laughing, or they were, you know, shouting at me, "Oh, you forgot to take your apron off," all these taunts that were mean. And I was just completely innocent and wide-eyed. I didn't really understand it, but I sure recognized that it was not nice. So anyway, I kind of started to realize that it's better to hide your German heritage growing up in Canada. But at home, it was wonderful. We spoke German at home. We had many rich traditions at home. Christmas was just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful in our home. Anyway, so there was this little bit of a, you know, dichotomy. And then, of course, we learned all the Holocaust stories through school and media and whatnot. And then, like I said earlier, that as a teenager, I reproached my mother and just kind of held her to account for all those horrors. So yeah, the video is very short. I basically just talk about the taunting that I received, I was embarrassed to be German, gave my mom this reproach, and that now I'd like to apologize. And I basically apologize to her spirit, because I have learned since about 2014 that these stories were not true about gas chambers and whatnot. And one of the things that I could have probably added in the video, maybe spent another 30 seconds or a minute on, is that I never said no Jews died. That is not something that I claim, but I could have spelled that out, and I'll say it now, that of course Jews died in the war. Many other people died too, but the cause of death, that is the question. You see, there was never a plan to exterminate Jews. And so most of the deaths that occurred happened in the last few months of the war, and supply lines were cut by all the bombing that was taking place over Germany by the Allies, and especially transportation corridors were being bombed. So the supply lines were cut, and so people starved and died of disease as well. Typhus was rampant. And so, of course, when the liberators came to the camps and saw many dead people and horror scenes of horror, so those are the stories that, you know, we hear about. Of course, there were many dead people in those camps, and that's a terrible thing. That's horrible. And it was a terrible war. So I do not dispute that many Jews died, but certainly not 6 million, way, way, way fewer, and certainly not by gas chamber and not by any deliberate plan to murder them. So that is the big taboo, I guess, that I've broken by bringing that out.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Let me just mention this quickly, because the CBC piece actually immediately went to that point, right? One of the quotes that they kind of pull out of the article says, "The Holocaust is a historical event that is not only undeniable in regards to the facts and documentation of its existence," right? So this, you're pinpointing it right there, that they immediately run to this accusation that you know, you or other people who are interested in this historical period claim that nothing happened around this period in Germany at that time. That's just ludicrous, which is kind of a straw man, right? They run with the extreme opposite to paint you in a bad light as much as they can, right?
Yes, that's right. Now, just going back to the Green Party, so I have been very involved. I ran in four elections. Three of them were federal elections in the 2000s. And I was a really good, you know, loyal Green Party member and for years, and both the provincial Greens and the federal Greens. And Elizabeth May, the leader of the party, she really made political hay with my video, because she distorted the facts. The fact is that I rescinded my membership July 30th, 2015, so over a year ago now. I rescinded it on principle, and I know that she received that letter that I wrote to her and to the administrative branch of the Green Party at the time, because she wrote back immediately, and that I followed that with another letter to her to explain more about why. But I really did put thorough explanation into why I rescinded my membership, and it didn't have anything to do with Holocaust. It had to do with 9/11 and her distancing herself from that whole issue, in spite of the fact that she knows that the official story is not true. So I was basically explaining that I felt she was compromising her integrity and that she was making herself be a puppet of the hidden hand of power by doing so, and that therefore she had no positive effect on any of the other issues that she's working for if we don't get to the root of who is actually controlling our members of parliament. Anyway, so I had rescinded my membership, and then there was a general election in the fall a year ago, like last in 2015, there was a general election. So of course I had not applied to be a candidate in that. I had already distanced myself from the party of my own accord. And so in the press release, she said that they would terminate my membership at the earliest opportunity, which I had already terminated, and that they had declined my application to be a candidate in the election in 2015. Now, that was an outright lie. And it is true that in 2014, they declined my application for a membership, or sorry, for candidacy, because there had been a by-election in my riding. And at that time, they had declined my candidacy because of a letter that I had written with regards to a situation with the president of the Green Party. He had written a very hateful blog on the Green Party website, identifying himself as the president of the Green Party. So, of course, the public will associate his blog with Green Party policy. And he was writing about Israel and the war on Gaza that was taking place during the summer of 2014. And he was writing in such a way that he was distorting all the facts, and he was blaming the Palestinians and saying Israel has the right to defend and all those usual things that are said to distort the reality of what is going on there while Israel was pouring white phosphorus on the Palestinians in Gaza. So it was really quite bad. And my letter went public that I had written at the time. I had said to Elizabeth May, you have to get him out of the party. He's in there to subvert the party and to bring it down from within and all these things. And I wasn't the only person who was outraged by his blog. Many, many other members were also outraged by it. And in the end, he did get fired. But it took a little while. At first, Elizabeth May defended his right to freedom of speech. But clearly, that was inappropriate because he was the president of the Green Party. So he was associated with Green Party policy. Anyway, that's the long story of it. So that was the only bit of truth to her press release when she made political hay out of my situation, that during 2014, I was not permitted to run as a candidate. She had told me I could run if I made that letter go away by apologizing for it. I said to her, no, I cannot do that because that would be the beginning of a compromise on truth. Like, that would be going down that road of compromise on truth, and I was not willing to do that.
Right. So, okay, let me get this straight. I mean, obviously, you're an environmentalist. You're interested in these kinds of questions, right? You're a violinist. You're a Green Party musician, right, who have questions about the accusations that has been made against your own people. And in fact, you've even been picked on in school because of your ethnicity. So, you know, the fact is that, I mean, you're not hurting anybody here. The charges has been like hate. This is a hate crime in some people's opinions, right? Why are your thoughts reprehensible on this? You're not advocating violence or hatred against a group of people. Isn't it actually the reverse here, where your claim is that actually fewer people were targeted and died than the official story has given us? I just don't follow it, to be honest, you know?
You hit the nail on the head, Henrik, that it is the reverse. I think that we should be relieved to find out that a lot less people died. And secondly, the hate is completely reversed. I am receiving hatred from an awful lot of people, and not from everybody. I want to make that very, very clear. There are many people in my town who are showing me a lot of love, but this process of ritual defamation is definitely taking place, it's an active process of shunning and ostracizing and hatred towards me. You know, people are shouting things at me and screaming at me, actually, sometimes in the street. It's quite surprising and shocking, and I, in return, am exhibiting friendliness and love. I'm not shouting hatred back at anybody. I'm not giving hatred to anybody. I am willing to talk to anybody that is willing to talk about the issues. Most people are not. Even if they show me love, this is the bizarre part. They will say, well, but that issue is off limits. We cannot talk about that issue. And that is one outlined in these elements of ritual defamation, that there is an avoidance of honest debate. And truthfulness is like the truth or evidence is just not part of it. It just does not enter into the picture. That part is frustrating, I find, but we have to find ways to get around that.
Can I just interject with a quick quote from George Orwell? The farther society drifts from the truth, the more they will hate those that speak it out. That's a quote from George Orwell. So this is what we're living today.
Absolutely amazing. Well, there are other components of this that we can tie into our discussion as we continue this further. But I want to switch over to you, Alfred, actually, here. Your version of your events that actually occurred to you over in Germany. Give us this from the beginning for those who haven't caught up or followed along in the story. What happened to you?
Okay. Let's see, what day was that? That was on the 18th, the 18th or something, about 2 weeks ago or so. Our house was raided by the Kriminalpolizei, and they confiscated all my computers and all storage devices because somebody had made the charge after the "Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust," after that was uploaded. And they said, well, you're not allowed to deny the Holocaust. So they made the charge. And it took a while before that sort of went through the bureaucracy here. And they came here. And that was good, because the time between releasing that video and the raid, I had made another video, which is even equally important as the "Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust" video. It was "Dissidents Speak Out," and then the German version was "Dissidenten reden Klartext." And this was a dialogue that I had with somebody who was spent a number of years in prison for his opinions, if you can imagine that, great Western world of free speech. and this is an excellent dialogue. And the raid happened. The timing of the raid was just impeccable. I couldn't believe it. In fact, the whole narrative of this raid was super. And there are many good aspects to this raid that will help our cause forward. One of the things is that it came 3 days after I had uploaded the German version of "Dissidenten reden Klartext," and I just sent the text out to some people that are doing like translations for, you know, into French and so forth. And just cleaned everything up. And then in the morning, normally I am always in the shower by about 6 o'clock or even 5:30 sometimes. But I had slept uneasily in that morning, and my wife went into the shower first, and then I was in the shower. And while I was in the shower, the doorbell rang, which was unusual because nobody rings the doorbell at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I listened through the door, and I heard something about Kriminalpolizei, and then, of course, I knew instantly what was going on. And it gave me time to actually think, okay, well, this is really, really good, actually, because it allows me to enter the scene the way of my choosing. And I also knew that when I come out of the bathroom door, there will be somebody standing there ready to apprehend me. So I said, okay, normally I put on, you know, my underpants or something like that before I come out of the bathroom. But I just came out completely stark naked. I grinned at this guy standing there and says, oh, is there something I can do for you? Is there something specific that you are looking for in my house at this time of the morning? And without flinching, he told me, yes, we have a search warrant and you can go and get dressed. So he, you know, kept a very close eye on me so that I wouldn't run away or something, which I wasn't going to do anyway. But I got dressed and came out, and then they went through. It was a man and a woman. Now, normally when they do a raid like that, they come with a 6 or 7 man SWAT team, you know, armed with sirens ablazing and so forth to make a real scene out of it. And basically to intimidate and to so the neighbors know that there's a real bad person living here, and you know it's part of the ritual defamation. The fact that they only came in a very civilized fashion, very professional, a man and a woman, shows that they are really not so keen on doing this anymore. They kind of have to do it because, you know, they're obliged to do it because their political masters force them to do it, but they're really not that motivated anymore. But then they also let me know that I am allowed to have a witness. And normally they bring their own witness so that I can't do anything except just, you know, get raided. And then we have a neighbor who I had given the PDF file of the description of Gerard Menuhin's book, Tell the Truth and Shame the Devil. And I had given the woman from that family this description probably about 2 months earlier in a conversation. So they were very well aware of the reality of this hollow hoax lie, the lie of the shrunken heads and lampshades and all that.
Bar of soap.
So we went over there. The detective was glued himself to my heels. He wasn't going to let me, take off, which, like I said, I wasn't going to do anyway. And we went over there, and I rang the doorbell, and the woman came out, and I says, there is somebody from the thought crime department, police inspector here. He wants to search our house, and we need a witness. And she said, okay, just a minute, let me get my husband. And this family, they are of nobility. Their name is like Graf von, which means like nobility, and very, very cultured, very civilized, very professional. So this guy came over, and he said, well, he doesn't have that much time, but he'll stay as long as he can. And after he has to go, he'll get his son, who is equally professional and dignified. Anyway, so they went, he came over, and they started going through everything and opened all the cupboards, all the drawers, came to the office room and started taking all my computers, all the storage devices. And then when the senior of the neighbor had to go home, had to go to work. We went over and he got his son, and he was equally dignified and professional. They were both lawyers, by the way. And so this whole scene certainly played out differently than these inspectors would have anticipated. I'm sure of that. They would not have expected, Graf von nobility as a witness, and the whole house was completely clean and everything was very, very tidy. And here they are confiscating my stuff because of Holocaust denial. I mean, that is so pathetic. And so that's it. Then my stuff was gone. And and they told me that it's going to take at least 2 months and so forth. Basically, it is a theft. The parasite that is in control of everything is using state power to basically steal the tools we need to propagate the truth. So it's basically theft. And I told them, I can copy that stuff off if you want to, I'm not denying anything. I'm glad you don't think I'm one of those people who would believe this nonsense. Everybody knows that it's a lie. I mean, come on, let's get over it. It's basically, they're trying to prevent it from spreading further as if that's going to help. It's sort of like if you're trying to plug a leaking dam with toilet paper. It's not going to work. I mean, the truth is out and it's breaking out. They're going in hysterical mode with ritual defamation and stealing people's computer systems so they can't work anymore, but it's not going to work. That's the latest. Yeah.
There's no restrictions so far that's been put on you. I guess the thought crime unit of the German police is they're in an ongoing investigation right now. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're going to look through everything, and I think it's just an excuse to keep me from working, but that doesn't stop us. I mean, there's something they don't understand about digital technology. I offered my cooperation. I says, if you guys need help understanding digital technology, I can gladly offer you my services. But of course, they wouldn't go for that. I don't really know what they're... To me, this is the last gasp struggle for them to try to contain the lie, which is out. I mean, it's out and it is over. Even if in some areas, like in Jasper or like Canada, is quite deeply contaminated with these lies. But in Germany and everywhere, people are really waking up and getting just a clearer picture, not only of 9/11 and the hollow hoax, but going way much, much farther back. And the thing is, that's why the parasite is so concerned, because 9/11 basically opened the door to how these deceptions are hardwired into our brains. But then when you understand that one, you can reverse engineer the hollow hoax. And you can reverse engineer what is called the world wars, which are completely different than what we have been led to believe. And that is the problem. The parasite is now finds itself in a spot where it is being unmasked, basically. It is being exposed. The truth is coming out, but the parasite can't come out, you know, with a white flag and say, okay, I give up. This is an all or nothing exercise for them, and they know that if the white race, if the European people really understand in what really has happened, that they are finished. And that is why they are so desperate now, extremely desperate to exterminate all of the white race, because once the white race has been exterminated, there will be nobody there to say, to accuse them, because we're gone. I mean, if you rob somebody and murder them, then that person cannot come and try to make claim his things back, because he's gone.
Right, so they're trying to take care of the problem once and for all. Now, when you say, just for newcomers to your work, Alfred, when you say parasite, give them a chance to understand that a bit better, than some of the mechanics of that. We spoke about that last time, but for people who didn't catch that that interview, how would you explain kind of that idea to people of how you're kind of framing this?
The parasite is, the best, what I would recommend everybody is to look at my Brainwashing 4 video, which is titled End of the Lie. And there I describe how this parasite has eaten its way through the white race and is now desperate to disable, to paralyze, disable, and destroy the white race before it wakes up. And if you mention who it is, then you are called an anti-Semite. So that should kind of be an easy one to, for everyone to understand.
All right. Very good. So, just to kind of finish that aspect of what happened with the police and everything else, have you been told anything of what's going to happen next? And again, has there been any kind of restrictions put on you in terms of what you can say or do or anything like that?
No, there's no restrictions. And in fact, I want to be very frank and very clear. I am really looking forward to my day in court, and I would trade for nothing in the world would I trade my position on the accused side to be one of the accusers, because this is a religious trial. This is basically what they did in the old days. They would take someone found guilty of what do you call it when you're
apostasy or something, right?
Yeah, apostasy. They would put them in a chair, sink them in the water for 10 minutes, and if they're alive when they come out, then they're guilty, and then they can be tortured to death. If they come up dead, then they were innocent, but they're dead. So
yeah, trial by ordeal? Wasn't that what it was called?
Yeah, and this is trial by ordeal. And right. The thing is this, and this is what everyone has to understand, that if they can cull the people out of society by getting all those people who have the courage and the three brain cells it takes to see that this is all a lie, if they can take those out, who is left to run the society? A society cannot possibly, in no way, survive the coming decades and the future with this kind of religious madness. I mean, it's basically you have to worship the devil or you are taken out. That's what we find ourselves in, the entire West. And we, the white race, if we don't deal with this, eventually some other race will. Because, I mean, the parasite will not, it wants to rule the world, and it believes it can rule if it can eliminate the Europeans, then it can rule uncontested at the top. But that's not going to happen. This is a delusion. It's insanity. It's psychopathic.
Monica, your experience seems to have been very similar in terms of the religious aspect, to this, that what we're dealing with is not really rational people that you actually can argue with or present evidence, or even just levels of doubt, right? Let's kind of for a moment just drop this, you know, I'm super convinced that I have all the answers of what happened historically, right? I've been amazed to see the unwillingness even to slightly engage in a conversation around this topic to simply present some big questions marks that we have or raise some of the, you know, concerns that we have regarding what they've been telling us, or the fact that they backtracked on things, right? There's no leeway here. There's no room, no margin for us to basically engage in a discussion. Is that your experience as well, Monica?
Yes, it is. And that is the part that just shows the huge success of the indoctrination and the mind contamination, also known as brainwashing, that has happened, but we don't like to call it brainwashing anymore because that sounds like the brains have been cleaned of something, but they have actually been contaminated. So we like to call it mind, you know, contamination of the mind by the toxic lies that have been presented to us all our lives. And that has been a hugely successful program. This is psychological warfare is what it is, because that is the strongest aspect of this whole situation we find ourselves in, that the people are overwhelmingly convinced that this is just so factual. But I don't want to leave people with hopelessness about it, because look, I was in that position too, and Alfred was too, and we actually managed to get out of it. How exactly that happened for us and why other people are not able to, I don't know. But I think people are able to. It's not easy. I mean, when I first started coming out of the mind contaminated state with the discovering that 9/11 wasn't as it was presented, I felt physically nauseous for weeks at a time. I was just feeling really, really physically kind of bad. And That is a difficult process to go through, but it does feel a lot better on the other side. And then I didn't feel nauseous anymore with figuring out the Holocaust, even though that's such a much, much, much deeper lie and so much more ingrained in us. But once you've gone through that first door, I think it is then an easier process, and others can do it too. We just have to figure out how to reach people. I mean, I try in all kinds of ways, you know, with just talking rationally with people, but this whole thing about when people just say, no, we can't talk about that subject, no, we cannot talk about that subject, then that is frustrating. And, you know, even if you point out the most obvious parts of it, for example, the numbers at Auschwitz decreasing officially by almost 3 million, and yet 6 million minus 3 million is still equaling 6 million. And even when you present that to the most intelligent people, they just, it doesn't budge them for some reason.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, isn't that amazing?
you know, can I say something about that? This psychological warfare that has been perpetrated against us has made all these people sort of frozen in the state of as little children. Little children, when they don't want to confront something, will just sort of look the other way and puff and puff. And that's what's happened. All these people, they have been, the psychological warfare has basically sliced and diced their brains so that they don't have a cohesive brain anymore. And they can't, that's why, like Yuri Betsmenov, the guy who basically defected in 1980, and he gave that speech in 1985, and he was astounded at the depth of this infiltration of the enemy. And he called them communists back then, but of course we all know that it was, that the communism was a Jewish front, basically. It was a Jewish power, just like Zion, just like they call it Zionism now. They always put some mask on, and that's what it was. And he said that when people who are demoralized by this psychological warfare, you can shower them with facts, with pictures, and it's completely meaningless to them. You get, because they're like little children. They don't comprehend it anymore. And if we fail to come out of this condition before we are completely inundated with the third world, unwashed trash from the third world, excuse my language, but that's what it is. We can't even read and write to a large part, and are criminals to another large part. If we fail to come to our senses before being overwhelmed by this invasion, then the parasite will have accomplished what it wants to accomplish. And then, then those people who cannot come out of their childhood state, their childish state of not confronting the facts, they can explain that to their children, but it won't even be of any importance anymore, because nobody will care. The invaders certainly won't care if the white people were too stupid and too childish and too frozen in their infantile state to comprehend what's going on. They won't care.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it is a irrational fear. You're very right about that. It's. I wonder what the psychological mechanisms of this is, the underpinnings that these areas have become really a no-go zone, right? You're absolutely not allowed to talk about it. And I always try to stress this idea that this in itself should be a red flags. The warning bells should go off at that point, where all of a sudden we reach a point, whether we are interested in history or just talking about the numbers or whatever it might be, that we we're basically not allowed to touch on this area, and where you have perfectly sensible and rational people going to an irrational state where they basically tremble out of fear to be associated with anything that has to do with this. It's just, it's remarkable watching it, and it's a conundrum to know how to kind of break through to that, because it seems to me that there has to be some kind of spark of interest there in the people initially. It doesn't seem to be some kind of information that is going to kind of change their minds. What do you guys think in terms of how to just get people curious to this?
Yeah, one of the things you brought up is fear to even let their curiosity take them to some investigation of the evidence and thought. And I think that one of the elements in this process that's happening to me right now, the ritual defamation, is to make an example of those who dare to speak out about this. And this is such a strong message to others to, oh, you better really be quiet, even if you do know the truth, because there are, I know that there's a handful or more of people in Jasper, my hometown, that know perfectly well the truth about the World War II history, but they are not really publicly at my side. And, you know, so the example that is made of them, and I've also given some thought to, in an evolutionary sense, we are social creatures. We are a social animal. And I think the group think is something that we have evolved to, that it over the course of history has been to our advantage, that if you kind of stick with the group, you know, that's a better way, a safer way. It gives you security. It gives you something. But that has now been exploited. And I think that the, you know, the enemy, they have really learned a lot about how our brains work and psychology and whatnot. So they've exploited that groupthink tendency in us as social animal to use it against us.
You know, don't these people kind of pride themselves too on, as we said before, tolerance and kind of understanding for things that are foreign to them, you know, that they are kind of, you know, we're, you know, they always kind of project on others that, well, you're xenophobic if there's things that you just kind of dismiss out of hand, and if you don't look into them, you have to find out for yourself to realize that there's no danger in this area. I think we should be able to take many of their arguments and actually use them, write it back against them, and show that, first of all, they're not tolerant. Everything they say is actually the complete reversal. But I think this in itself would actually help to wake some people up.
Yes. You know, let me interject at this point. Framing and projecting, framing, inverting, and projecting, that is how they are doing all of this. If you, I'll give you one example. I think most of your listeners are probably familiar with Barbara Lerner Spector and that video where she says Europe will not survive if it becomes multicultural. This is a good example of reversing and she says Europe will not survive if it does not become multicultural. What she is really saying with that is the Jews will not survive if Europe becomes cohesive again and stays homogenous and figures out what happened. Then the Jews will not survive. That's what she is really saying. So that's why they are desperate to multiculturalize Europe, knowing that it will go down in chaos and warfare, and the Jews can just slip out the back door as they always have done in the past when they have taken down civilizations. We are not, you know, the white race, the Europeans are not the first time that Jews are taking down a civilization, basically. It's the only difference this time is that it's global, and the technology, the destructive technology, is nuclear. But they've done this a number of times before, and usually that's why they try to erase every trace of the civilization they take down, so that nobody can
remember.
Can remember? Yeah, nobody can remember. And I'll tell you how you can see what's going on there. Okay, Monica, you know how you had to struggle with your German identity, and that led to this wonderful video, you know, Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust. So we go back to the video Schindler's List. It got an Oscar. That piece of trash, that disinfo propaganda, got an Oscar award. And now they have a video, it's called Nebraska, also an Oscar award. And in this film Nebraska, which came out, I think, a couple of years ago, they portray the white people of North America as being complete and total half-wits. And they, even the memory of them is not worth remembering. There is nothing cheerful or good about the white people in America as this movie portrays them. And then you look at what they are and how they are inciting against the Europeans now. On all the mainstream media or you know, the TV and so forth, I call it parasite vomit, this stuff. Instead of TV, I call it PV, for parasite vomit. On the parasite vomit, they are pounding all the white people in North America, in fact, in Europe, everywhere, the same way as they pounded the Germans, until the Germans, after being completely traumatized and crushed in what we call the World Wars, which was basically the Jewish attack on the European peoples. After that, they had them, they got this traumatized people, pounded them with this disinfo until now they are groveling on their feet and punishing anybody who questions the parasites' version of what took place. And if the European people don't understand that before it's too late, then it will be too late.
That's a scary picture, you know, what we have developing here, because it's, you know, at the same time, you know, we have a lot of problems, of course, with external, you know, threats and whatever. But at the same time, the major issue is internal, and the fact that we have many, you know, politicians, Gentile goyim themselves, who are basically more than happy to kind of abide by these people's rules and kind of do the bidding for them. And it's a huge problem, you know, and this is something I'm going to kind of discuss a bit more in the second segment. We're going to take a break in a little bit. I want to ask you guys a bit more about ritual defamation. I was just searching a bit on it while you guys were talking about it. I've heard about it before, but I didn't know about all the points. I think it's actually Fredrik Tobin that has a copy of that, if you will, on his website. Kind of interesting. So many more aspects to get into and deconstruct this further, but guys, I wanted you to mention your websites, your YouTube channel, and if there's any other videos out there that you want people to take a look at. And also, I just wanted to ask, you know, I know that you guys have put yourself on the line out there. Is there any way that people can help you? I don't know if you need it or need a helping hand, but I just wanted to give you the opportunity to mention that in case, you know, that is something you that you need.
I'm not sure what to say about that in terms of what kind of help, but certainly I have been really appreciative of the outpouring of support. Like, people have sent me all kinds of supportive messages and offers of help. I'm still fine in terms of financial. In fact, I would like to bring up that if people are financially able to help anybody right now, it's Arthur Topham, who's trial is coming up. This is the second stage, I guess. Last year he was convicted of one charge and said not guilty on the identical charge, but for a different time period, hate speech laws. And this is the charter challenge that's coming up in October. And I know that he's really desperate for, you know, funding that. So they can find that on radicalpress.com. In terms of my own, like, if people are interested in more of what I've done, there is a video of the speech that I gave recently in Toronto, and that's on YouTube. And the name of it, I don't have it right now, but maybe that could be linked in your description.
Sure.
Under this. And then, there's Brian Rue has interviewed me, Glaring Hypocrisy, Sean and Mufida. In Britain, they have an interview there, and Jim Rizzoli and Diane King, or we did that together. So there's a number of interviews and whatnot that have taken place since this video was released, and there's more coming up. And I'm really happy that this has kind of led to a whole new job in my life, because really, okay, I might have less work with my violin right now, but I think this is a mission that is extremely important. And I tell people my motivation is peace and love. and truth and light. So that is my motivation for doing what I'm doing. It's completely opposite of what I'm being accused of. I'm being accused of hate. And it's now or never, like Sean and Mufita say on their Glaring Hypocrisy site, it's now or never. We need to do this. I did want to just soften one of the things that was mentioned earlier about the invaders, which, of course, they use this word racist. It's one of the control words against us if we, you know, protest about, you know, the so-called refugees, but it's migrants invading Europe. And really, we don't have anything against those people other than that they should just have stayed home. There aren't wars in most of the countries that they've come from. Very few of them are genuine refugees from war-torn areas. And of course, the wars are caused, again, also by lies. So all those things. This is a deliberate destruction of Europe being planned by the invasion of people from all over Africa and whatnot. And I just wanted to say that, you know, it's we don't have any hatred towards those people as individuals, but there is we don't like that they are being artificially sent to Europe.
I mean, it would lead to disaster. Sorry to interrupt, Monica, but I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right. There's no, I don't know of anybody that just hates these people for the sake of hating them because they're different. But the fact is that this will lead to an utter disaster when there's been forced migrations and different kinds of, you know, similar events in the past. This has led to horrible destruction and warfare and conflict. And I mean, let's be honest, we can already see that in Europe with all the crime that's increasing and all the problems. And there's been numbers of studies done on this by Putnam. And there was another one recently that spoke about how, you know, basically cohesive, you know, neighborhoods is, you know, you get that if you have basically an homogenous population. As soon as you begin to force diversity, you lose all that kind of social fabric that you've had in place before. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. This is a planned intent to basically make sure that we are not going to be able to live in peace again. So, in fact, they are the ones who are bringing the conflict and the hate.
Yes, and also this whole thing about diversity, it actually is completely the opposite. You destroy diversity by mixing everybody up together artificially like that, because then in the end, like in a generation or two, you don't have the diversity of all those different cultures anymore. You have one big mixed up, you know, culture or whatever you want to call it by that time. So it's exactly the opposite. They have turned that on its head as well.
Yeah, that's right. All right, but that's good, Monica. Lots of more interviews to check out. We'll link up some of the things that you do have out there. I think you've made another video with Alfred as well. But give us your YouTube channel, Alfred. Is that your primary place to go to, or do you have a website as well set up at this point?
I do not have a website. I have my videos, and the most important video is actually the most recent video because it deals with this Sorry Mum video, and it is called Dissident Speaks Out. And if you just do a search on Dissident Speaks Out and my name, you should be able to find it. And the German version is Dissidenten reden Klartext. And the latest version on that was the 30-minute version, which includes Monica's apology to our mom at the end. Because I know in Germany, for example, the one on my channel has been just hidden. Like you can't find, if you search for it, it just doesn't exist. But I don't notice that when I look at it from my user. So they're using all kinds of really tricky little tactics to try to keep the truth from getting reaching the German people. They're using different tricks in different areas. But they will not succeed. And another thing I want to mention at this point is that this Dissidenten reden Klartext, or the German version of Dissident Speaks Out, this video has been sent with a very searing, scathing email to all of Germany's judges and all of the mainstream media outfits. So these people can no longer pretend that they don't know. And we will be targeting not only the judges and so forth, we will be targeting just like people have to become proactive, have to take the initiative. This is no longer a spectator sport. It's not like sitting on the couch eating popcorn watching a football game. We all have to do something. And people who understand what's going on, if you can burn CDs, for example, just burn these important videos on the CD and put them, if you're afraid to use your name, put them anonymously, send it to people that are important in your community and make sure they understand that this lie is, the truth is coming out, and people's a whole standing will be measured by when they came out with the truth. We will all be measured by that. So that's what I'm trying to tell people. And I notice people are coming around very quickly. I, for example, am not suffering from ritual defamation. In fact, good friends of mine are coming closer to me now because of what I'm doing. So it's just, we're in different phases of this and different areas, but the truth is coming out. And those people that will be the most sorry sights will be those that held out the longest onto their lies in their childish state of mind where they couldn't face the truth. I do not want to be in one of their positions.
No, it's true. And I know we can talk more about this in a second, but I know that there's very also a lot of people that are supposedly free speech advocates. They don't like this aspect of hate crime, or they can even see themselves as victims in this if they, let's say, you know, criticize Islam or something, and they feel they're being hard hit by, you know, the media, whatever, if they're semi kind of out there. But there's nothing like this. I mean, let's be honest about this. And many of those people would never come around to kind of defend people. They're actually in jail right now for their opinions. And that's an incredible, you know, kind of hypocrisy, you know, around that. But once again, I just want to bring that note to people that it's incredibly important to dare to touch on this. It's not only about the history itself. It's about the issue of survival. This topic hinges so many things on it. It's about this aspect of us, you know, not daring to speak up against, you know, our own destruction, basically, because they constantly pull us back into history and accuse us of, you know, of these crimes, and that if we organize in any capacity, then it's going to be another Holocaust all over again, right? So that's why it's so important to kind of break this bubble, find out what the truth really is, what really happened. Is there any truth to the allegations against us and the German people? And if not, we're in a completely different situation. It's a completely different game at that point. So that's why it's so incredibly important. And that's why I want to say thanks to both of you for daring to speak out and you know, putting yourselves out there, and for giving us the opportunity to learn and realize that there's more to it than this. So thank you to both of you for your work.
Yes, thank you, Henrik. I just want to, before this first hour ends, the second video that you had talked about, it's the CODO video, and I think it's very, very important. That CODO stands for Committee on Open Debate on the Holocaust. And they can find that if they go to the CODOH site, CODO site, or Alfred's YouTube channel. And then I've started my own blog. I haven't done that much with it yet, but I do plan to do more with it. It's called freespeechmonica.wordpress.com. So I plan on doing more with that. I just haven't really told that many people about it yet, because I haven't really been that active on it yet, but that is going to develop.
All right, very good. Thanks so much, guys. We'll take a short break right here, then we'll be back with more in the second hour. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk to you right after the break. The second hour with Alfred and Monica is coming up as we get deeper into a diagnosis and description of the problem that we face. We get both Alfred's and Monica's candid take on what exactly it is that we are dealing with. We speak more about the mechanics of ritual defamation. We discuss the predictable control words such as racist, Nazi, bigot that really prevents people from discussing vital issues and legitimate concerns. We contemplate on the dilemma that Europeans, being the creators of high-trust societies, are unfortunately predisposed to trusting what the news, government, and social consensus tells us. We have no real reason to believe that someone would lie to us. It's an interesting second hour that goes deep into the crux of the destruction of our countries and of our people and what drives this fact. RedIceMembers.com is the website to go there to sign up for a membership with us and get access to the 1,000-plus radio shows that we have available. We now also have 10 archived Weekend Warrior live shows on the site. We have other previous videos, films, inside episodes, some of the older webcasts, and you can also, of course, tune in live as we stream the Weekend show. Fun stuff. Later on the show, we have Ricardo Duchesne and the guys from Kulturkampf coming up. We'll be right back after the break. Stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening.